SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. At the Races at the Ocala Breeder Sales Company. The start of the two-year-old in training sale season. And we were just talking with Steve Chirac and Brian DiDonato. And now we got Tom Ventura. And Tom has been so nice and gave me the full tour. I'd been to Ocala three times maybe, but had not been out here. And just seeing and having seen pictures and what's gone on, it's remarkable. And everyone, Tom, is just blown away by what you've managed to turn this into here. And it continues to evolve. A couple fine touches yet, but congratulations on what's gone on here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Appreciate that, Steve. We're getting close to the finish line here, and it certainly has turned out the way we expected, and it's been a long road, but we've really kept the customer in mind and hope that the buyers and sellers both appreciate what we've done and enjoy the surroundings and bid freely.
I love it. You know, explain to everybody how the calendar, the movement in the calendar evolved. Because I was talking with the boys about going to the Calder, you know, the old Calder sale, which had been in February. I mean, when the sales companies are setting up the calendar, how did all that kind of shift and morph over the years?
Well, you know, one of the things, when we went to Miami and we went there in February with the first sale, those horses did well out of those sales. But as time went on, the shifting of the two-year-old season at the racetrack became later and later. And so you didn't have quite as many two-year-old races early in the season. So you bought a horse in February. You basically had to kick it out for a little bit and then come back later. And I think the horses aren't under any pressure to make that early sale. And the ones that jump through the hoops early made it to the sale. So another couple weeks always gives the consigners a little more leeway and some time to evaluate their horses. And the other thing, certainly from our perspective, is OBS became more and more prominent, and the Ocala area it became easier for the buyers to come here rather than us to take the sale to the buyers. And I think we've grown in importance and in the quality of the horses that the buyers like to come here, A, to come to our sales, which we appreciate, and they've come out of here with some nice horses, and B, they can come and look at the horses that they may have at the farms here, at the training centers, and evaluate their horses. And the other thing that I think is really nice when the trainers come to Ocala, they're not having to hustle back to their barn, and they've got their foremans, and they've got their head people in charge, and they're here focusing on one thing, and they want to buy their horses, and that's good, and we think it works for us, we think it works for them, and so that's basically the direction that it has gone over time. And obviously with a two-year-old in training sale, you have an extended period with the training and the under tack shows, and everything is online now, and the videos can be watched while we're streaming within an hour after they're done, they're up and they're edited. So we try and keep up with the times as best we can. So we have to present the horses in the best we can. And fortunately, we've done well. And without the consigners bringing those good horses, we're not anywhere. So we have a nice building. But unless we have the good horses in that nice building, we're not going anywhere. So we need the horses first, and then the rest of it we try and take care of, make everybody feel comfortable here.
Well, and the growth of OBS has also seemingly helped drive, coincide and drive a bit of a resurgence to Ocala in general, because hadn't there been a bit of a flattened period where the basic horse industry in general in the area, and it feels like you have been kind of the engine on the train to bring Ocala back.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're more or less the center of commerce for the horse industry here. You know, we provide an area for people to sell their horses, present their horses, and the weather and the talent pool here for horsemen and veterinarians and the clinics that are here. The weather through the winter, you know, when we've got 80 degree temperatures in February and they're fighting snow over the places, the horses don't miss any time. That's why they have spring training in Florida. The baseball players can play and while it's snowing in different parts of the world. So we think that the land is very good. But in 2008 and 2009, when the market crashed dramatically, it impacted everywhere and certainly impacted this region. And the training centers have certainly been established, and the bigger training centers and the local little smaller locations have done very well. You know, the breeding is still on the rebound. We don't have these big, massive breeders like we did in the past. We don't have the Farnsworth Farms and the Franks Farms and those type. But in terms of training location, this really has become the place to be.
Well, Mark Cassie yesterday, and certainly his operation and Mrs. Weber in Live Oak, and then you've got those communal training facilities, Morrison, where horsemen can lease out a barn, multiple barns, and they've got so many different operations, and whether it's layups or whether it's development, convenience and the opportunity, and of course the year-round. The year-round racing can't hurt at Gulfstream either. That has developed.
Yeah, it's critical that for our success and the health of the entire community that the racing in Florida has to be good. And you know, Gulfstream has stepped up and picked up where Calder wanted out, and they're still trying to get out. And you know, we hope that they don't get to play High Line instead of have horse racing. It would be an impact on the horse community. But the Gulfstream racing is good, and the year-round is some stability that was needed. Certainly would like to see it improve even more. You know, you look around the country, and you've got Monmouth Park getting an influx of $10 million for a 70-day meet. That's a big move. You've got Colonial Downs coming in with a short meet with some nice purses. You've got the Kentucky historical racing machines impacting purses. So from that perspective, I think the buyers are getting a better shot at the end at the racetrack. And ultimately, that's where it all ends, and that's where these horses go from here. They go to the racetrack, and the owners need a chance to make it. And it depending, and if you look around, you see people from all over. You see them in the Midwest. You see from California. You see them from the Northeast, and you see them from Florida. And I think that's good, and I think if the horse doesn't make the A track, he can perform at the B track, and the purses are reasonable enough to where they get a shot to make some money.
One part of that certainly vital on the ownership side. How do we successfully recruit and develop a bigger pool of owners, because it feels like, and we, yes, the partnership groups have a healthy, well established position, but people say there's a horse shortage. Well, that to me, that's kind of a silly way to put it. It's an owner shortage. If there were more owners, breeders will make more horses. How do we bring in new buyers and more buyers?
You know, that's a tricky question, because you know we've been talking about that for a long time. You just have to make it a viable activity. Certainly, it's one in which you have to enjoy and have to have passion for, but it has to be one in which you have a chance to make some money, or at least get through it to where you're not losing money. And like you said, I think the partnerships are an excellent way for people to get involved in the situation. You know, as an industry, I think, you know, we have to reach out in different directions. I think the television is important. Some people don't like the, you know, extended time between races, but now with simulcasting, you can kind of alleviate that somewhat where there's something happening some other places. But we do see one of the things that we've seen a little bit is that some of the people that have raced in the past historically have been the racing stables enjoy the selling part just as much. And so we've created some end users and we've converted them to sellers. So that isn't necessarily good in the long term. You like the action and they like the action, But at the end of the day, we do need more owners, and I don't know if there's one simple solution. If there was, we'd have them all tripping over themselves.
On that topic, too, when you talk about the opportunity to either make something or not hemorrhage money, the commercial marketplace, we get a sense, and this came up yesterday with Becky Thomas, too, that the vast majority of breeding operations these days are commercial breeders, and that there isn't as much breeding to race, and I guess that it does go back to the ownership question. I mean, nobody's going to get to the point of starting their own broodmare band. I mean, there have been some people that have, we've seen kind of wade in, and whenever I've had a chance, Bob Edwards, a good example. When Bob Edwards burst on the scene, and I asked him, do you have plans to breed? And he said, I think it'll be irresistible to retain, any of the fillies that we campaign successfully. And, there are plenty that, turn around and put them into the bloodstock sales in November and redistribute them out into the world. But it just feels like the market is overwhelmingly commercial. And it's obviously healthy for the sales companies and consigners. Is it okay for the business, though?
Well, ultimately, Steve, I think that without the end user, it's not healthy, it's not a healthy environment, but, I think there's a decent mix in terms of the, we do have, even at the super high end breeding stock, very high end broodmares are not producing horses that are intended to go to the races for the breeders themselves. So, there is no magic solution to that, and I think that you're just hoping to get more people interested in the game, and the betting aspect sometimes is ignored, we just kind of take the handicappers for granted. But I do think that there's been some movement in that direction to really recognize the importance of the betting public,
and that's
the engine that drives the whole thing.
From your standpoint and from the the growth, or at least just the maintenance of the business, I mean, what areas do you look at, and whether they, I mean, certainly everything, it's an ecosystem, as they say, but what areas concern you about the industry at large and keeping it vibrant? We talked to the boys earlier about that middle market so often that is referred to at the sales. We know that the top fanciest pedigrees and the fastest the breezers are going to sell well, but that we keep hearing the pushing the market, the middle market down further, and selling that middle group of horses at prices that sustain the that breeder. What areas do you think we need to address most readily? There's so much discussion going on around certainly the last few weeks, but Craig Burnick's Idea Foundation floating areas for the industry to focus on. What do you think and what are you most concerned about long term?
Well, one of the big items in my mind is the expansion and the dominance almost of ADW, and the ADW wagering. That money is not being distributed in the same fashion as with the live track money is being bet, and that the money needs to be shared more amongst the participants, amongst the horsemen, amongst the breeders, and it's concerning that money is going away from the tracks, away from the off-track betting outlets that are helping funding the purses and the breeders' awards, and there needs to be a focus on how to make a structure to where the ADW is viable for the investors of those companies, but it also is paying their fair share into the breeders' awards and into the horsemen's and the purses, and I think that's a That's it within the industry. That has nothing to do with casino gambling. It has nothing to do with slot machines. It's strictly wagering on the horses. It just to me needs to be an equitable way to distribute that money more than it is today.
Well, that of course, that topic has not been broached much of late. But Fred Pope would write about it, the inverted pyramid. That the bricks and mortar had started a chain reaction right from the get-go, not recognizing in the 70s what would happen ultimately. So that the inverted pyramid, and I haven't heard it referenced really of late much, but I know there's been some renegotiations each time the signal contracts have come up. The bricks and mortar organizations are kind of chipping away a little bit, and from what I understand.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I think also a lot of states don't have regulations in place, including Florida for the ADWs, and I think that needs to be something that needs to be brought to the forefront and really addressed.
For you and for OBS, I mean, there were so many things that were surprises. I mean, some things I kind of knew. We would always talk before you would have your races over on the other side. And the one thing I didn't know that you had, I looked to my right, and an OBS feed company that was news to me.
Yeah, we've been doing that for 25 or 30 years now. That the same guys that had the presence of mind to start this company and help market the horse product said, hey, you know what? Why don't we make our own feed? We're importing this feed. This way we can control it better. So they bought a feed mill, and that's an equine-only feed production facility. So we deliver throughout the area. We have our own retail outlets. And the one thing that is... Not only do we have a good product, but it's fresh. So you can make your order on Monday. We deliver it on Wednesday. It may have been made on Tuesday. So the fact that we have quality feed is important. The other part is you're getting it fresh, and it's something that has just been an extension and a very good one from our side to be part of the horse industry within this area.
It's fascinating, and you got the whole line of product. I mean, and the tack shop right there, the full line of stuff beyond the feed. I mean, the other supplements and all that, or just the feed?
No, we have the outside feed for dogs and cats.
Really?
And hogs and chickens and whatever you might want. We just don't manufacture that. We don't don't produce the non-equine feed. We produce our own feed, and we deliver hay, and we do all sorts of things. And the one here right attached to the sales grounds, obviously a convenient location for the people while they're here selling. And we have another location in town a little closer to the horse farms.
I love it. Well, we're just fascinated by the whole atmosphere and everything about what you've accomplished here, and the growth will continue. You're getting ready to get started in there, and 2 days of horse sale that start the two-year-old in training sale season. Some obviously big time high profile first crop stallions led by American Pharoah. The excitement kind of building. What are you expecting among the hips? Do you do much of your own examination to see what who might top the sale?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helps us short term just to see what this sale is going to be like. It helps us long term because then we can see what the American Pharoahs look like in general, the Carpe Diems, the first crop sires. We get a look at the horses, and we like to see how the works translate in the barn. And so just walking around the barn, not only do we get to look at the horses, we interact with the buyers, we interact with the sellers, and it's been very active. There's a lot of different metrics that we use to measure the sale going in. Hotel rooms were a little hard to come by, so that was a good sign. The credit requests are very solid, and the one thing that I'm pleased with, I see some buyers and trainers here that may not be the $400,000 or $500,000 purchasers. They may be more of the $50,000 to $100,000 purchasers, and that's good because we need depth to the market. And there are horses here that are going to fit those programs, and You know, we have 70 New York breds and 90 Florida breds, so they're going to fit into the programs here. And I think having a not only depth to the top end, which I think we have, and hopefully that'll be shown in the next 2 days, but I think having that next tier of horses attracts a bigger buying base, and that was the goal when making this, when we made this sale just a little bit bigger than it was.
Well, these 600, a little less after the outs, obviously, but then 1,200 in April.
1,200 more in April, and we've got a who's who of sires in that sale. It really has had been a spectacular sale for us. It's maxes out the capacity of our facility. You know, the June sale, which is like, oh, the June sale is just another horse sale. Well, the June sale has had two Breeders' Cup winners, Stormy Liberal won back-to-back, and Golden Sense won back-to-back, and Seeking the Soul. So legitimately, they're all good sales. And the one thing, you know, if the horse needs a little bit of time and to show its best in June, the consigners are very confident now that they can present their horse there and get fair value. So, you know, I think all three of our sales are established, and certainly you know, the April sale with the pure numbers attracts the buyers from, you know, 10,000 up to 2 million, and we've sold them at both ends. And obviously, as a sales company, we would rather sell more $2 million horses than $10,000 horses, but there's a horse for every buyer, and, you know, we attract an international crowd, and you'll see some of that today on the sales results, that we've got buyers from different parts of the world as well as throughout the country here.
And we should mention, you know, the yearling sale, that I can tell you that when we started getting involved with the horses, and, you know, being at Saratoga during the summer, that August sale was positioned at a place that made it hard for people to, you know, kind of cut away. And pushing that sale into October has proven to be really a successful and savvy move.
Yeah, I think that's helpful, being in that spot. You know, Keeneland takes up half of September. You got Saratoga and Del Mar going on in August, and it was a little difficult. And a guy like Mark Cassie, who's one of our good buyers at the yearling sale, you know, he's not leaving Saratoga to come to our sale, and he was able to participate and buy some, you know, decent horses. He bought a great stakes winner last year, and hopefully some of the horses that he bought this year turn out as well. So I think it's a better fit to the calendar. It's a little tricky, the yearling market. The yearling dates are very crowded, so it's hard to find an optimal spot. But we think that's a little better position than it was in August.
In terms of a bloodstock kind of a sale or horses of racing age, that has never been or not recently. You haven't been in that market.
No, we've had that. It's not on the calendar of this book because we just had it in January. So we did have a mixed sale in October and the mixed sale in January. And we thought with the reduction in the numbers of breeding, we thought we'd put them in one spot. And we put the racing age horses in January while Tampa Bay Downs is running and Gulfstream is running, and therefore it, you know, have a good spot for a lot of different types of buyers, breeders, weanling, pinhookers, and racehorses.
That's right. Okay, because I thought there was one, and I wasn't sure, you know, where it was on the calendar. So you really the gap, all the different spots on the calendar, yeah, really the flow and fit nicely, and the sale season for 2-year-olds underway in minutes here at OBS. Tom, can't thank you enough for having me here. I realized when I was going to Tampa for the Derby and with the HBPA convention this week, I thought, you know, why not come up and spend a couple of days? And I'm so happy I did. I'll do it again.
We appreciate you coming here, and I do have to let the listeners know that Steve is the best dressed person on the grounds today.
You know, if you're out here, are you and I the only people wearing ties?
That's right. Or the bid spotters as well.
Okay. All right. Well, and they're going to start spotting the bids momentarily. And who's the auctioneer, the prime auctioneer?
Ryan Mahan.
Okay.
Ryan.
Sure.
Ryan has been with us since almost day one, I believe, and his crew does a great job here.
And is it a traveling? I mean, when or is it just, you know? Do you have your team of bid spotters, or are there? Is it a professional roadshow for
no,
spotters?
No, it's you know, Ryan puts the crew together. A lot of these guys work with him up at Keeneland, and you know, they have a wrapper together and they get the nice flow, and we have very good guys that have been with us for a long time, but Ryan has been the engineer of that crew, and they come from different parts of the country, as far as, you know, the Washington State,
cool.
Oklahoma, Kentucky, different places. And they do car shows, they do horse
that's
auctions,
awesome.
They do a lot of different things.
I love it. I love it. Well, the beautiful new pavilion, which is just glorious, is starting to fill up, and with the start of the sale season, ready to go, and I see the board actually switched over, and it's ready for Hip One shortly. Tom, best of luck to you, to all the breeders, the consigners, the buyers, and your team. And you can tell the atmosphere from everybody. They're all kind of beaming and with pride about the facility and about what's happened here.
Well, thanks a lot, Stephen. I really appreciate you coming in, and hopefully there'll be some fireworks early in the game here today.
Well, and we're watching Becky Thomas. She didn't promise, right?
Yeah, right. There's a tap at relatively early on Hip 33, I believe.
Exactly.
That should attract some attention.
Well, and we'll be on for that one, and that is the Broman's tap it out of the wonderful Artemis Agriterra. Tom Ventura and OBS Sales. Halfway in already on this Tuesday. We'll take a break here, and the sale will be getting going, and we'll continue.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at Ocala and at OBS, and I called him the Prince of Ocala because Jonathan Thomas, of course, at Bridalwood just down the road. Rick Hammerly and Jimmy were there the other day, and Hammer was blown away.
Well, that was a really cool visit. I've known him by reputation, and to spend a little bit of time with him was a real pleasure. Wealth of knowledge and great guy.
Yeah,
great guy. No,
absolutely.
It was a really cool experience, and he came out of nowhere, you know. Jimmy, we were expecting, but me and Rick was really cool.
Well, and he had to go back, otherwise he'd be sitting here with us this morning, and, you know, you're in, obviously, to keep tabs, and I suppose, you know, you got a short list, you're buying a little?
Yeah, we're trying. I mean, it's a competitive market. I think, like, a replication of the rest of the sales throughout the past couple of years, it's going to be a feeding frenzy at the top, and, you know, famine at the bottom. Hopefully we can come away with a little something to do well with.
We're asking everybody, among the first crop sires, who have you been impressed with and who has progressed, whose progeny have progressed since the yearling sale?
Palace Malice, for me, probably has made the most progression, where I'd say American Pharaoh has probably had the most continuity. You know, weanling to yearling to two-year-olds, his horses have been exceptional movers, talking about American Pharaoh, but the Palace Malices, to me, have kind of, like, I don't want to say ugly duckling to, like, princess, but, I mean, certainly they've
kind
made
of
it
raw,
yeah,
more refined.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, you know, from a small sample size, he had a really good breeze show.
And, you know, is that the same pattern, basically, as Curlins themselves?
I would say so. I mean, certainly you wouldn't expect them to be 4.5 furlong, you know, winners in April. But, you know, they've been very kind of elegant horses, very good moving, good dispositioned. You know, there's one that will probably sell really well here in the next day or two.
Are you going to be signing any? You're going to be signing a ticket?
We're going to try.
Attaboy, all right.
We're going to try.
That leads to the question that is fun to ask, which is the bargain hunting, because there's plenty of, you know, they might be big and a little clumsy right now, and they're turning up here, and everybody's caught up on the, you know, the 10 flat and the 9 fours, and you're not going to be, these horses that were doing this in end of February, early March, that's not what you're looking at later on. Isn't there countless bargains to be hunted up from those?
I'd say so. I mean, I think you have to go and look at each horse with a crystal ball mentality, you know, trying to think of what they'd look like a year from now. And, you know, I was an average size, a pretty good sized guy in middle school, but that wasn't the case in high school. I was smaller than everybody.
That's
everybody
a funny
caught
point.
Up.
Yep.
So, you know,
yep,
you have to, like, look at them and see what they might become in a year or two, and that's what you're really hoping for.
In your personal growth as a horseman, explain how you plugged into that, you know, that physical, you know, the understanding of where a horse was, you know, as a weanling, as a yearling, what he projected to, because, you know, I've heard that constantly when I go looking at yearlings with Gary Siaka. You know, I ask him, you know, what are you looking at? He goes, you're looking at the horse and you're picturing it as a 2-year-old and as a 3-year-old. And I mean, that doesn't happen automatically. That's got to be cultivated.
It does, and it's, you know, like anything else, is trial and error, and sometimes you learn, as often you would, through mistakes, you know, and horses that you bought that haven't worked out, and you try to figure out why they didn't work out and fix that. Vice versa, if they did, you know, you try to replicate that, and you know, it's a very aesthetic kind of thing where it just looks right. You know, sometimes it just looks right. You know, you tracked it to a certain size and look and kind of a way emotion, you know, that the horses will show you, and you know, I think it becomes more of a feel, you know, with practice. And certainly we're lucky because we get them as yearlings, and then we get to see what works as a 2-year-old, and then ultimately we see if they can perform on the track. So it's been, I'd say, the last couple of years, it's starting to make more sense, but I was a very lost person here about 4 years ago.
That's, you know, that's part of what, you know, it's part of the development in any walk of life, in any career. What blemishes or what potentially perceived negatives by others' viewpoint, what that you will forgive that some other people might not when looking?
I don't know if I forgive something that most astute horsemen wouldn't. I mean, certainly I'm fine with some, you know, imperfections up front. Turning out specifically, I'd be fine with moderately offset knees. I'm certainly fine with. I think I'm a little less forgiving on a hind leg because I think that drives a lot of the power. It's more, I'd be more nitpicky about action and mechanics and how a horse moves versus like one little thing, because you can go pick on any horse, you know, for having a amount, you know, some sort of mechanical deficiency, you know. So it's more how they move with everything working as opposed to one piece.
You're looking for a certain fluidity,
athleticism. Yeah.
Well, because we're hearing, you know, it's funny because we're hearing, I think, a little bit more than usual so far with the 3-year-old crop. The people focusing on Vekoma,
right?
George's horse, and you know he paddles, quote unquote, and I think it's actually good because the public is getting a chance, especially with video and with workout video. I think the fan base and the wagering base, they're learning. You know, when that topic comes up, because I saw a lot of people asking, you know, what does that mean? And, you know, how do I see it? And so from that standpoint, you know, some of the things that are happening out there, I think are good for people to learn, a learning curve.
There's no doubt. I mean, certainly, you know, XBTV has been a great addition to our business, and not only from a betting standpoint, but from a horseman standpoint. I mean, I if I'm competing in a big race, I would watch every breeze of another horse.
How about that?
But also, you know, it's a great learning tool, you know, as to how horses can move and what you can be a little forgiving about. I think oftentimes we get caught up in perfection, but that rarely is going to be the case.
Give us an update, too, because I know you're going to have to start looking at some horses here in the early going. But update on everybody, Catholic Boy.
He's doing great. He just started back galloping about 3 weeks ago. We look to have his first breeze at the end of next week and, you know, hopefully targeting something in May. Nothing's been confirmed. But sometime in that time frame.
Are you looking to start the season on the main track or on the grass?
I don't know. I mean, that's up for debate. I think, I don't know that we're leaning towards one surface or the other. We'll just see what happens from a timing perspective and what seems the best fit for him.
Do you sense any change physically in him from 3 to 4?
He's fleshed out, meaning he's put on a little bit more weight. He's certainly, grown up a lot. You know, he's starting to figure out he's a colt, which, you know, is good or bad, but hopefully that is good for his career down the line. But honestly, you know, with that horse, I just hope for continuation of what he's been, and that would be the most important thing. We're seeing that.
Well, and I know fans have been watching and waiting, for him to work his way back onto the. You had a couple of little hiccups that slowed you down a little bit.
Well, after the Breeders' Cup, he got kind of, you know, racked around a little bit and had some minor cuts and stuff. But honestly, of, you know, some of the upper-tier horses we've kind of stopped on for the winter, he probably had the least amount of wear and tear, so we were happy about that.
You know, it happens that the horse that we talked about that summer, 2 summers ago, Arecchietti, just ran the other day in the Latonia. You sent him up to Turfway.
Yeah, we kind of a roundabout way of – she's actually getting bred to Taprit. So, it was kind of a swan song.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, as Aaron and I tend to do, we try to think outside the box and go 2 turns. It didn't quite work like we had hoped, but it was a much shorter trip over to TaylorMade, you know, to get her prepped for hopefully what is going to be a good little broodmare career for her, because I think she'll make a lovely little broodmare.
That was one of the funniest, you know, because she came up and we were sitting right by Lou Cobell's office, and you came out and somehow I know we made a fan a bunch of people cashed when the big occasion came. I got to ask you about one-time starter that is lurking, and that's that Ready for Prime Time.
Yeah, he was a cool addition to the barn. We got him about 90 days ago, and you know, he's a lovely bred horse. I'm more than ready out of a Gone West mare, and we thought he ran a very respectable race first time out of Gulfstream against some heady company. You know, he finished third to a horse of Shug McGahee's and Chad's, and a little bit of a troubled trip and a little bit green, but you know, that horse, I think we're shooting for the 30th at Gulfstream, this Florida Derby day.
Florida Derby day.
16th. If everything goes well, you know, but he's definitely an interesting horse, and hopefully, you know, he's going to have a little bit of a three-year-old career ahead of him.
Well, that was the race that produced Valid Point and Bar Harbor, mm-hmm. and third beaten less than two for everything.
Yeah, well, Gulfstream Maiden, you know, it's kind of like Saratoga. I mean, you can run into anything, and, you know, you might look up and one of those horses is winning the Belmont Derby, you know, here in July.
Well, that might be trained by you.
Well, that would be great. I'd sign up for that for sure.
Well, Jonathan, always tremendous. You guys can follow Jonathan. You should be on Twitter. Under Jonathan
at Thomas Stables.
Thomas Stables. I can never remember each one.
That's hard.
Well, good luck here.
You're the best dressed man in Ocala.
Well,
they're not used to this shirt and tie.
I'm funny when I come to Florida. They did see me on Sunday in shorts, which is a rarity. nobody wants to see that too often. And yesterday I was open collar without a jacket.
There you go.
But I can't do that for too many days in a row. it's hard. I know. But I'm sure. You know, the Floridian marketplace. When I stay here for extended periods during winters, I slowly, you know, devolve.
It'll casual you up.
Exactly.
Yeah, so.
Exactly. Well, I just realized that I've got flaky forehead from I have to burn off that winter pate.
Yeah.
It was not doing me any good. So, Jonathan, thank you
Real
so
pleasure.
Much.
Steve,
always
thanks for
tremendous.
Everything you do for us. And,
not
you
at
know,
all.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Thomas, Catholic boy on the return, and watch for Ready for Prime Time, and always watch for Jonathan, who does a tremendous job, the longtime Todd Pletcher assistant then came to Bridlewood and slowly worked his way out into the afternoons. We're going to work our way closer to the top of the hour. Let's slip away for a break. I think they're getting close to the third as well at Cheltenham. We'll see what happened earlier after that opener we managed to catch. We didn't expect to, but we did. And let me check. Yeah, third race at Cheltenham is coming up shortly. This is a grade three, the Ultima Handicap Chase. And the group of, oh my gosh, look at this, 24. 24. We'll go postward in the third at Cheltenham. Back after this to Ocala. And just looking up, I think we're well underway. And we'll look at some early hips. And ideally, we'll listen in on hip 33 when that one enters the ring. The tap it. Those early fireworks that were promised. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
With
35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.